Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. Yes, the weather today is frightful, but the rain will serve my garden well. Of course. I've been growing my own produce for some time now. How you say? Come, sit, stay a while. It would be a pleasure to tell you. It all began with a bit of curiosity and poking around. And before I knew it, I found myself talking to fellow Lancaster native and middle school teacher Marion Pearsall Miller, who, after having grown her own produce for 20-some years, started a vegetable garden at the school where she works. She had a wealth of knowledge to share about the gardening process from beginning to end.
I'm not sure I really know when I decided that I wanted to start a garden, but I think it came out of a couple of things. When you guys were little, I used to take you to pick strawberries all the time. And I think I decided that it might be fun to grow our own strawberries in the garden. And as I started to read about how to do that, I started reading about how to grow other things. And then I think that led to snow peas and green beans. And so one thing kind of led to another. And that's kind of how the garden evolved.
I believed at the time that something as small scale as a garden didn't follow the same rules as a large scale farm, but there are more similarities than you'd think.
There are cycles to different kinds of crops. Certain crops like heat and certain crops like cold. So you learn that there's certain things that you put into the ground at different times. Some people are real organized about it and they map out a schedule and they map out, you know, grids for their gardens. And I've never been that kind of person. But I know, for example, that garlic needs to be planted in the fall. It took me a couple of years to figure that one out. But garlic needs to be planted in the fall so that it'll produce in the spring. Onions you put in early in the spring. Peas, lettuce you put in early in the spring. But tomatoes and green beans and cucumbers and peppers, broccoli, those kinds of things you put in. They like hotter weather. So they go in, you know, or sometime in May and then, you know, produce in July. And then there's another sort of production cycle that you can start late in the summer that goes into the fall. That's probably my weakest time because it requires you planting when it's really hot and watering things a lot. And also then you have to stay on top of it. And that's when the school year starts for me. So I tend not to be as involved in the garden. So I tend to do the early season and the middle season and less in the late season.
But what of the rain, you ask? Well, fortunately for us, she had much to say on that as well.
That really varies from time to time. The rain by itself generally does not give enough nourishment. One of the hard things to learn, and I've learned it less in the garden than with things that I put in pots, is how much you have to water to keep something producing without overwatering. And the fig tree is an excellent example of that. I have a fig tree in a huge pot, and I watered it what I thought was enough for the first couple of years, and it produced figs, and the figs always fell off. And I couldn't understand why the figs were dropping off, and I thought birds were eating the figs. And it turns out that I just wasn't watering it enough, because a plant in a pot needs much more water. And what I thought was a lot of water, like once a week, really was not. I mean, it needs to be watered every couple of days if it's really hot and dry out. So you really have to, you kind of have to learn in a raised bed or even in a regular bed. That's different than in a pot. It doesn't dry out as quickly. So you have to learn, but the rain generally by itself is not enough.
A raised bed, she said. What did this mean? I pushed further into the subject.
Raised beds allow you to sort of control the soil a little bit more. So you've got, you know, a foot or two of soil, and then you've got, you know, whatever the ground was underneath. So you tend to, it allows you to cram plants or to crowd plants a little bit more than you can in regular soil. And I'm not sure what the science is behind that, but I know that in raised beds, you can grow things a lot more closely together than you can just in regular beds. So I did that because I wanted to, I didn't want to take the whole backyard and turn it into a garden. So, the two raised beds that we have allow us to grow, you know, pretty much all the vegetables that we want.
It sounded like a lot of work. Surely there must be a generous time investment, I asked. But her answer surprised me.
if you're going to take the time to grow things, you want to make sure that your soil is in good shape. So I will spend some time getting that ready. And then planting does not take a huge amount of time, but you want to make sure you mark what you plant so that you don't accidentally think something is a weed and pull it out. I've done that one. And then really, it's a matter of weeding. The nice thing about raised beds is because you can grow things closer together, you've got less weeding to do than when you've got a regular garden. And there are lots of ways that you can take care of that. Some people put plastic down and punch holes in it and put plants in through the holes. I don't do that, but that's because it's not that big of a deal to have to weed. So I would say, you know, I'll go down and look at the garden and see what's growing and spend 20 minutes weeding here or there. And then another time I might be down there for a half hour, and another time I might be down there for 5 or 10 minutes. It really varies. But it's not an enormous amount of time. It's very doable. An hour, 2 hours a week, maybe.
It sounded simple enough, but I still found myself feeling anxious. Was this really something that anyone could do?
Anybody can do it. It takes a little bit of reading, but I suspect you could probably just sort of, you know, learn by talking to people and you know, figuring it out on your own. Although I find it helps to, I'll spend time on the internet looking up how to grow things in Lancaster County or how to grow things in Pennsylvania, because you can read something, and if the person, you know, who has written it is some agricultural organization or group, you know, in Washington State or in, you know, North Dakota or something, what they're going to write is going to be different than what's true for Pennsylvania. But one of the things that I think is really cool is that when you grow things, you tend to want to grow more. There's something neat about being able to grow something, like to put a little tiny seed into the ground, and then watch it like emerge, and then watch that get bigger, and then watch it get flowers, and know that those flowers are going to turn into, you know, produce of some kind. It's a really cool process. I think in Lancaster County, we take a lot of that for granted because we're surrounded by farms and you can buy a lot of fresh produce. But I think there's really something wonderful about being able to grow some of your own foods. And I think even for people in cities, you know, there are lots of ways that you can grow things in pots. There are lots of ways that you can grow, you know, just to be able to get something fresh. So you can do it as long as you've got light from a window, for most things, or a porch or a back, you know, someplace that you can put, where you can put something outdoors, you can grow things.
As a seasoned, experienced gardener, I asked her, what advice could you impart to me, a green hobbyist hopeful for a green thumb? The answer, it turns out, is to persevere.
I've been growing vegetables since we moved to Lancaster, so 19 years. And I would say the first 5, 6, 7, maybe even 10 years, I have tried a lot of different things and had varying success with them. And some of them, it was just because I did it wrong. And some of them, it was because those weren't good plants for, you know, for our region. So, you know, there's certain things that I think are pretty easy to grow. You know, green beans are not that hard. Tomato plants are really not that hard. Rhubarb, there's certain things that just take to the soil well around here. So those are things that we've grown over and over again. You learn, I think one of the biggest things that is hard to figure out when you're first doing this is how much you need in order to be able to get a supply of food. Like when I first started planting green beans, it was really cool. And like on a good day, maybe I could pick 8 or 10 green beans, which isn't even enough for a meal. So you learn that you have to plant a certain amount in order to be able to get a decent amount. You know, I don't want to plant 20 tomato plants unless I'm going to be planning to put up a whole lot of food by freezing it or canning it. So a part of what what's taken me the longest time to learn is how much we needed as a family of 5, how much we needed, you know, if I wanted to have some extras for the wintertime. I like having tomatoes in the wintertime. So I will oftentimes freeze them. Some people will dry them. Same thing with broccoli or beans or peas or things like that. And then, you know, do I need to plant 100 onions? Do I need to plant 50 onions, 20 onions? You know, that kind of thing. Those are the things that I probably have taken me the longest time to sort of figure out and to figure out what's a reasonable amount for our family.
I thanked her for her time and left the conversation a more hopeful, excited man, now anxious to get home and get started. Oh, it looks like the rain has finally let up. I think I'll go check on my tomatoes.